Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report, online at SchachterEnergyReport.ca. He's speaking to us from Calgary. Welcome back to the show, Joseph.
Oh, my pleasure to be with you, Jim.
OPEC Plus says they're going to ramp up production. Are they really going to do that, and would it have much effect at the gasoline pump for your average consumer?
Yeah, OPEC is, it looks like there's a little positive news coming between the United States and, you know, President Biden and the Crown Prince in Saudi Arabia. Those two have been not talking to each other. Biden thinks he's a war, a murderer because of Khashoggi, the reporter that was killed in Europe. And so he hasn't wanted to talk to him, and the king is very ill, so MBS is probably going to be the next king. So I think the U.S. has finally realized they've got to, find a way to bridge the gap and talk. So the announcement today was that the OPEC would increase their production by 648,000 barrels a day. Just putting that in context, in the month of April, they produced 28.6 million. We haven't seen the May data yet, and that was up 153. So they were supposed to increase each month by 430,000 barrels a day. They haven't been able to do it because of problems in Nigeria and Libya and others, and of course Saudi Arabia being annoyed at the United States has not wanted to increase production. Now they're throwing an olive branch to Europe because of the loss of the volumes from Russia, because of the shipborne shipments no longer being allowed. Pipeline shipments are still being allowed, especially to countries like Hungary, Slovakia, Serbia, etc., that are dominated by Russian crude, and their refineries are configured to handle that type of crude, which is not easily replaceable. But shipborne will be lost. But the offset is that India and China are going to be buying those reserves. China specifically is taking advantage of the $30 to $35 per barrel discount to put those barrels into their strategic petroleum reserve, because they used up quite a bit of it in recent the last year or so. So building their SPR back to the maximum at a $30-$35 discount is quite attractive to them.
Now, with the Russia-Ukraine conflict, are oil prices going to remain super high as long as those two sides are fighting?
I think that's the dynamic on the supply side that everybody's worried about. The offset to that, and where I'm spending my time, is on the demand side. The economies around the world are weakening. We're seeing that from the data. Inflation is getting out of control. The U.S. just had a data point for labor cost rise of over 12%, which is, the Fed's going to be very worried about. We've seen the Bank of Canada raise interest rates by 50 and maybe even talking 75 at their next meeting, to cool off the inflation pressures, food, shelter, and energy, which is not coming down. In fact, prices have gone up again in the last week. And so I think that, demand has to be watched. And the U.S. demand, this week, that just came out today, showed that the demand was 19.5 million barrels. That's down from 21.4 in January. So the normal seasonal downside is happening. And at the same time, that's 1.9 million barrels. At the same time, of course, in China, we're seeing weakening demand because of the lockdowns and all the other issues going on in their economy, the real estate difficulties, etc. So you could be looking at 3 to 5 million barrels of demand destruction that could be occurring. And we're not seeing the data yet, and that's not something that the media or the financial markets are talking about. I think they will in the coming months, and that could take, even if the Russian war in Ukraine is continuing, that could take the war premium out, and maybe, you know, put in a recession discount, which could take the price of crude definitely below 100 and probably below 90.
Now, with Europe promising to wean themselves off Russian energy as much as possible, will that help bring prices down?
In terms of oil, no, because, you know, they're going to have to buy from, you know, from other places that are running at capacity, especially, you know, in Middle East OPEC. The U.S. really can't ship much more oil right now. You know, they're still producing, you know, the numbers that they've been producing, and that's 11.9 million barrels a day, and that hasn't grown. And of course, you know, they want to meet domestic demand, you know, independence. Where the U.S. can help, is sending some product, but more importantly, they're sending natural gas. LNG exports are at a record pace, 14 BCF a day, and a lot of that is going to Europe. They do have contractual volumes going to Asia, but wherever the barrel, wherever the molecules can be moved, and shipped to Europe, they are. But European storage is still very low for both natural gas and for oil, and that's why I think, you know, the recession is more likely, because central banks are realizing that you get into winter 2022-23, and if the economies are as strong as they are now, that's going to probably drive prices much, much higher. So the desire, not intentionally desire, but the need to slow economies down and to lower demand is going to be very important to all the central bankers. And I think the, you know, June 14th, 15th, we have the U.S. two-day, you know, a meeting Tuesday, Wednesday. The Wednesday on the 15th, I think, is going to be watched closely. Is it a 50 basis point increase? And what do they talk about future tightening? If they start throwing numbers around that they might go 75%, if they talk about other ways of tightening, you know, we know that the taper, you know, that the maturity of the bonds, they're letting them roll off, so that the quantitative tightening is happening on the Fed's balance sheet. But the question is, will they take even further action? And we'll see, you know, tomorrow we'll see Friday we'll see the employment data for the month of May, and then we'll see, you know, the next few months everybody will be watching them. And if the inflation pressure from wage side continues to be a problem and productivity is negative, that's going to force the Fed to be even tighter and force the ECB and the Bank of Canada and others to follow.
Now, right now, employers in Canada and the U.S. say they have a labor shortage. Something like 1 million jobs are open in Canada. It must be 10 times that in the U.S. What does that say about the employment future and wage rises? Is the only way to get more employees is to increase wages?
Well, part of it is, you know, the job openings are much, much higher than the number of people looking for work. So that pushes up, the cost of labor, because companies that really are wanting to make sure that they can grow, and will have to pay much higher wages. That's also why we're seeing more union pressure, be it Starbucks or other places, where people are saying, look, the wages aren't high enough, and the pressure's on them. And I think that, the fact that there's a shortage of labor, just bodes well for union organizing and for union pushing for higher wages. I think that the Fed can't afford to start seeing regularly double-digit wage increases like we saw in the late 1970s that forced Paul Volcker, the Fed chairman at the time, to raise interest rates to, you know, mid-teens for the long side, and short rates were over 20%. And you and I know that because, you know, we were around in those days, and it was pretty painful out there, and we sure don't want to see that again. And more importantly, the governments can't afford to it because they're the biggest borrowers, they're the biggest debtors, and 100 basis point rise in rates is painful to them in terms of their spending. And if it's, you know, if we see rates go up by 300, 500 basis points, that's going to be very stressful on federal and provincial budgets.
We'll have more with Joseph Schachter right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, Radio and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Joseph Schachter. Joseph, Asia and Europe now would love to get their hands on more North American natural gas, but is Canada doing anything to help out there?
Well, our energy minister said that potentially in 3 years we could be, you know, the St. John, New Brunswick facility potentially could be on stream. And it's right now an import facility. It can be turned into an export facility if all the approvals come through and the financial the FID says it's economic and profitable for Repsol. I believe that they're the owner. But the problem, of course, is that we need to build a lot of pipelines in eastern Canada, particularly in Quebec, to move gas from the Marcellus or from Western Canada to that export facility. And right now, Quebec is not being very favorable to the fossil fuel industry, and that is a big problem. If they're economically incentivized to support it, that hasn't been determined and discussed. And so, to me, I think the eastern ports, the eastern exports to help Europe are unlikely in this decade. So even though the federal minister says it can happen in 3 years, I'm skeptical. The LNG Canada facility is supposed to be on in 2025, and they'll make a decision to expand that and double the size of it. That could happen over the next year, and then the build would happen in 27, 28. But the benefit there is to send those volumes to Asia, because it's closer from a transport point of view, and then it makes Canada a more attractive supplier. And I think that's, our growth will happen on the West Coast, and it'll go to the Asian markets of Japan, Korea, China, etc., which will mean other places that supply, like the Gulf of Mexico, could be the places where the supply comes to help Europe.
Now, I know we talked about, what about a possible natural gas pipeline to Churchill, Manitoba for export. Have you heard any chat about that, or is that just literally a pipe dream?
Well, I think it's a pipe dream by people like me and others who see the benefit of it, because you have 9-10 months a year that you can probably move volumes by ship, from Churchill, through the passage to the markets. But there's been, the Manitoba government, I think, needs to get involved. The Churchill has to, the city has to make, land available. First Nations have to be, agree on side for it. Where do the pipelines go to Churchill, and do they, are they going to be approved? Remember, the federal government gets, they're involved in that act. And so, to me, it's problematic, again. Going back, a decade ago, we were talking by now there would be 12 facilities built on the west coast of BC, and we don't have the first one done yet. So all of this takes long, long time, and the approval processes are a lot more extreme than they were a decade ago.
What can we do to help Europe get off Russian energy?
Ooh.
Or is there much Canada can do?
I don't think we can provide them with any energy directly. I think, because where we have the advantages, we can ship our crude down to the Gulf of Mexico, and from the Gulf of Mexico, they could go to Europe. But right now, we're filling the Enbridge Line 3 expansion. The next phase of growth will happen when we have the TMX pipeline built, but that again is to the West Coast. So those increasing volumes are likely to go to the U.S. or to Asia. So again, a direct capability to help Europe is tough, but we could maybe provide to consumers, customers, and then those customers would not use U.S. crude or South American, Colombia, Brazil, Argentina crude, and those crudes could end up going to Europe. But it's more of a logistical challenge rather than Canada having a direct capability to meet the tough needs of Europe, given they're going to cut off 1.2 to 1.8 million barrels of Russian crude, the shipborne, to start, and then at some point they may even cut off the pipeline oil, except to the countries that are desperate for it and that won't sign off on it, like Hungary. Hungary has been probably the toughest one, because any one country can nix the deal. So Hungary has been getting exemptions right across the board, and Hungary, of course, has close ties to Russia. So they are like almost the trump card against the EU from really damaging, the supply situation from Russia.
How's Canada's future supply situation, rig counts, exploration, things like that?
Well, the rig count is picking up. We're getting past breakup. Last week, I think we had 15 new rigs come on. Most of those, I think, went to oil work. The rig count, I'll just pull out the data. The rig count, in Canada last week was 103 rigs, up from 62 a year ago and up 15 on the week. And all of the rigs were for oil, so 55 rigs are working for oil, up from 28. And that number should grow to 200 to 230 as we get more active and more road bans come off. So we'll be having, probably a record drilling season in the months ahead. And then heading into the end of the year, more natural gas will get brought on for the winter demand and the demand both domestic, because our inventories are pretty short, as well as U.S. are below what is needed and below a year ago and below the 5-year averages in all cases. So, I think the industry is sitting in pretty good shape. The big issue for them is going to be labor. The industry lost a lot of people during the downturn. Those people went to other jobs and other places. And the industry has to be able to attract them with high wages and consistent hours, because if you're not going to make enough hours and you're out in the field, why would you do it? Versus staying close to home, going to sleep in your own bed at night, in a local job that may pay less, but the quality of life is higher, and that's really one of the tough competitive issues for the industry. And historically, a lot of people have come in from the East Coast, from Newfoundland and Nova Scotia. Were flown in by plane, corporate planes. They came and worked, and then they went back, or they had, whether their travel was subsidized or covered by the companies. That's a little tougher right now because the job market in Eastern Canada is not bad.
Joseph, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on in the energy front?
Well, I think the big thing to keep an eye on is the economic conditions, and are we going to see tougher Federal Reserve, Bank of Canada, and do they want to have instead of just maybe a slowdown in the economy, but more of a severe economic slowdown, as you saw yesterday from J.P. Morgan chairman Jamie Dimon. He said that he thought there was an economic hurricane coming and that it's coming at us. So that's pretty dire from a senior, financial, official. And his concern is it's twofold. One, of course, the war and the impact on food prices and consumption for people. And the other one is central bank action and how tough it's going to have to be, similar to the kinds of things that we've talked about. And so I think those are the things to keep an eye on. We write about that in our Eye on Energy, so that's a complimentary product that we have. So people can just go to our website and get that. And then our paid product is more of the company-specific, recommendations and ideas and evaluations. So, but people can want to keep up with our economic analysis. They can go to our website and access it there.
Now, on the food front, I think Alberta and Saskatchewan could be poised because of their natural gas. They could heat greenhouses and maybe get three or four crops off a year that way. Is that something that's being contemplated or talked about?
I'll have to pass on that one. I just haven't picked up anything on that. I agree with you that we do have a sufficient natural gas in the provinces. The problem is the price has gone up to over $7 an MCF, which is pretty high, and I don't know if greenhouses can afford that given the price of the commodities that they get at the end. You know, it's like, you know, when we had cheap electricity in Alberta, there were a ton of, you know, Bitcoin or coin, crypto farms, in the province. But as the price of electricity went up, they closed down and went to cheaper places where there was electricity. And of course, electricity all around the world is going up now because of the coal prices going up, and then oil prices and natural gas prices are going up. So, that's why I think, we saw crypto or Bitcoin at 69,000 and now it's at 31,000. And, if the price of energy keeps on going up, price of electricity keeps on going up, it makes the economics of making, additional coins pretty tough.
Joseph, thank you so much for chatting with us.
My pleasure, as always.
My guest has been Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He was speaking to us from Calgary. If you have any questions for Joseph or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com and we'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.